So, up next is the July 22nd edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides. And we've been having trouble with streaming and archiving differently, but I'm told we're all okay at the moment, which, of course, is some hours before actual netcasting time at 6 o'clock on Thursday, July 21st. So we'll see if we get out. If we do, it'll be great. If we don't, we tend to make it into the archives usually a day or so later, sometimes at the same time, and sometimes it can take us longer, but be patient with us. This is kind of a compilation of different things from the last week or two. Interviews and God knows what. So you listen in and we'll both figure out what's going on.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So let's begin with the little something from this Facebook page that I look at a little too infrequently. It's called the Cruisable, as in Santa Cruzable, like crucible, but cruisable. Santa Cruz and Central Coast Politics, abbreviated SCCCP. I think that's Joe Williams' site. He's an old-time activist, musician, supporter of homeless civil rights, although I haven't seen much of him lately, although I just haven't been much in touch with him. He's got a posting that talks about, it's an update on court proceedings for the Black Lives Matter mural defacement trial. This is, you may remember if you've walked past the library, on the road between the library and City Hall, you'll see a large yellow Black Lives mural. Well, it's not really a mural. I think that's what he's talking about. It's a large printing in the street of Black Lives Matter, and it's been screeched over with a sort of wavering tire track lines. And that was a couple years ago that they did that at the height of the Black Lives Matter movement. And there's some kids were caught, and they're facing a restitution hearing coming up on that. I'm going to first read what this, and it's not entirely clear who is, I guess it's the SURJ Showing Up for Racial Justice organization that's posting this. I haven't heard of them. It'd be nice if they showed up at the police station, and I'll be talking more about that later. Or, I don't know, in support of homeless folks outside, some of whom are black. I don't know, it might have a larger proportion of black folks in the homeless population in the Benchlands than in the general population. Again, I'm not sure of that either, but you don't see too many black faces usually unless you happen to go to a Juneteenth rally. Anyway, on June 2nd, according to this SURJ posting, there was a restitution hearing for the men that vandalized the mural. The judge did not make a decision of that hearing. She will make a decision regarding restitution on July 25th at 9 a.m. And that's going to be next Monday. Prior to July 25th, attorneys will be submitting briefs to the judge, according to the reading of this. A brief is the attorney's opportunity to make their case regarding what they believe restitution should be set at. Now is our chance to make our voices heard. There is no way to put a monetary price on safety. But we can make it abundantly clear to the judge we want these men held accountable for the harm they perpetrated on our community, especially on our black community. You can address letters directly to the ADA, Michael Mahan, M-A-H-A-N, Mahan, at michael.mahan@santacruzcounty.us. For those that want to share their voice but don't have time or capacity to write a letter, you're welcome to sign this. And there is a website which you can get to by going to the Facebook page for, again, it's the Crucible, Santa Cruz and Coast, Central Coast County Politics, SCCCP. And let's see, the message continues. We can also show up on July 25th at 9 a.m., 701 Ocean Street, that's the courthouse, courtroom 6, to hear the judge's decision regarding restitution, show our support for the community. And let's see, are there any notes on this particular thing? It's, no, there is a website which you can find by going to the Facebook page. My comment on this is that I tend to regard, just like Justin Cummings, then mayor in 2020, taking a knee with then police chief Andy Mills in a public demonstration, supposedly of racial justice, hardy har har, it has nothing to do with racial justice. It has to do with political posturing. And if you're really interested in racial justice in Santa Cruz, you deal with actual discrimination that happens against racial minorities here on a regular basis by the police department. That's something that I've been doing in terms of at least occasionally raising the cry and very occasionally doing protests at the police station. But with all the power that Black Lives Matter had, there were some protests. And Black Lives Matter, to their credit, or those who also supported Black Lives Matter, showed up to support the rights of homeless people to be able to shelter in place, both first at the post office area and then later at Food Not Bombs area. The protests ultimately were successful in removing the fences, and they returned them to the police department, which I thought was a unique nonviolent civil disobedient response. I'm a big fan of nonviolence when it happens, but an opponent of dogmatic nonviolence when it's asserted as a way of controlling and reining in protests. So, it would be nice to see some action. Traditional groups like the Coalition for Racial Justice, that's not the right words, it's led by Simba Kenyatta and others, which hasn't done shit over the years in terms of actually reining in racial abuse, except chatter about how they're kind of huddling down with sheriffs and police officers. It reminds me of the kind of criticism I have with Steve Plaich when he joins the Santa Cruz Police Department Chief's Advisory Committee. You've got to, I think, take a much more principled, aggressive, active stand. And even if it's unpopular and you get some of your ties frayed with people in authority. And that's my reaction to this upcoming July 25th court hearing for restitution for this very token deal where the Black Lives Matter was printed in the street. But Black Lives Matter obviously didn't matter because there was no real action taken to deal with, racial profiling by the Santa Cruz Police Department, class profiling, which probably unduly impacts folks who are black in Santa Cruz, and other acts of discrimination. If you talk to Curtis Relaford, you can, or actually any high-profile black individual in Santa Cruz who's not politically connected. You'll hear numerous instances historically and in continuing into the present of discrimination that go unaddressed by authorities, though lots of token attention is paid, of course. And, of course, police defunding and or refunding into actually productive community resources has not happened, has not even been meaningfully discussed by the shitty council, and isn't on the city mangler, that's the city manager, Matt Huffaker's scorecard. It ain't there. So there's that. And we have an anti-racism book circle coming up. I mean, sure, nothing wrong with educating yourself. I've got a lot to be educated on myself. But it's not active. It's not action. It is, I call it chatter or academia or, well, that kind of covers it, I guess. Recess Center for Nonviolence, Fall Anti-Racism Book Circle for Justice, for Celebrating Justice, Ketanji Brown Jackson, I guess, latest court appointee. And Jackson is the latest Biden token appointee to the court, the Supreme Court, which Supreme Court has been a pretty nasty body actually throughout history. The more I read about it, the less I like it. What you learn in political science classes in high school and college has nothing to do with the real class bias and corporate bias of the Supreme Court. And that, I'm sure, includes Ketanji Brown Jackson, but perhaps I shouldn't be so sure because I haven't researched her record particularly. But knowing Joe, we don't want no federal funding for abortions, Biden, or you might call him Joe, let's send more weapons to prompt a nuclear confrontation if we need be with the Russia and the Ukraine, Biden. I don't think we should be too hopeful of her. But again, you know, and also when you join an institution, you tend to take on the color of that institution rather than even if you have the hope that you can transform it. It's often not the case. In fact, I'd say it's generally not the case with powerful political institutions in this country and probably in most countries. And if you check out the SCCCP Facebook page, you find also some recent letters and articles from the Sentinel regarding the library buried under the parking garage controversy. I guess the upcoming vote on the issue in November, and the kind of the back and forth between Stephen Kessler and Don Lane, and that's included even in this morning's Santa Cruz Urinal, if you want to follow that. Again, I support one side of that issue myself. I'm a fan of keeping the library where it is, though this is the same library that hassles homeless people using their bathroom, that whose board supports moving into a into the garage area of a what is it, a 5 or 6 story building that will destroy green space and move the farmers market. So it's really a mixed bag for me. Also stuff about the Coastal Commission and RVs, which has become at last, thank God, a fashionable cause among both liberal groups and some more radical groups, Santa Cruz Cares, Love Boat, the left end of the Democratic Socialists of America. Anyway, you could probably check out that website and find it of interest. There's an article on the oversized vehicle ordinance in limbo as the Coastal Commission block forces rethinking. It's an interesting question. I don't know what the Coastal Commission's refusal to rubber stamp the City Council's OVO ordinance, the thou shalt not park at midnight from 5 if you're over 22 feet in the coastal zone, and thou shalt not park in a majority of the places in Santa Cruz all over the city within 100 feet of traffic signals, stop signs, crossroads, things of that sort, which really is a draconian expansion. Or it's actually the same expansion that Rochelle Noroyan, former council member, tried in 2016. And again went to the Coastal Commission and it failed. And as I have continued to say on occasion, this is a real waste of city money to keep going to the same place and expect a different result. Unless, of course, you're trying simply to show rally support for the right-wing get those RVs out of our town gang, which, of course, they don't support. And I hope you don't either. And according to the Lookout, which is this publication that I don't know you can if you can get it without paying for it, unless you happen to be able to read it off the website of someone who already is. Maybe I'm wrong about that. There's an article by Max Chun, Oversized Vehicle Ordinance Now in Limbo as Coastal Commission Block Forces, the Coastal Commission Block Forces Rethinking. And it reads, the much-debated oversized vehicle ordinance, notable component of the city Santa Cruz's aggressive approach, indeed, to addressing, actually to concealing, homelessness issues. Sorry about that one there, Lookout. Looks like you're not looking out. Has hit a significant barrier in the form of the California Coastal Commission. Last Thursday, that would be a week ago, the CCC ruled that the ordinance requires state review before implementation. Passed by the City Council with a 5-2 vote on November 9th, the ordinance bans oversized vehicles, and I guess this says it's 20 feet, not 22, as I'd said before, or more feet long, or 8 or more feet high and 7 feet wide from parking on city streets between midnight and 5 a.m. These vehicles would not be allowed to use electric, gas, or utility connections, have open fires or unattached trailers, display unsanitary conditions, or park within 100 feet of intersections. That last provision is the item that raised eyebrows at the Coastal Commission. And, of course, I add a lot of other things should have, because Coastal Commission ruled in 2016 that there was inadequate storage and there was also inadequate evidence of a real crime problem that justified such a serious destruction of access to the coast for everybody, but particularly for poor people. Along with requiring the vehicles to park more than 100 feet away, the article continues, from intersections, the same caveat would apply to crosswalks, stop signs, and any traffic signal effective 24 hours a day, and this whole thing would be effective 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. According to the Coastal Commission, the ban would greatly affect coastal public access, fully eliminate a large portion, 54% it estimates, of oversized vehicle parking areas in the coastal zone. Now, of course, this is the figure given to them by the ACLU and the Disability Rights Coalition. They knew this full well before it was rammed home to them with a sort of a shout-out in a second letter by the ACLU Disability Rights Coalition to the Coastal Commission staff here locally, the people with their head up the butts of the City Council staff, after the City Council staff and the Coastal Commission staff locally had issued their everything's fine with the OVO, just roll right ahead, we find that it's just okie-dokie and there's no significant issue that requires any further examination. However, when the ACLU and the Disability Rights Coalition sent the letter saying, what are you talking about? What about this 100-foot example that, and this 100-foot provision that you are ignoring? They said, whoops, and then they claimed that they had new information. But, of course, Coastal Commission had no new information. What they had was new pressure, and that is really the key here to actually changing enforcement in Santa Cruz, I believe. And I don't just mean enforcement from pressure from attorneys, although that's good. I'm glad it comes. But it's so rare, so hard to muster, and so usually entangled with political problems That is to say, the people who might get this to happen, the Steve Plaches, are too busy mending their fences with and aspiring to have their voices heard and respected by the same conservative bodies that control these, whether it's the local ACLU or the racial justice organizations or Resource Center for Inaction, which calls itself the Resource Center for Nonviolence. It's rare that that can happen. But when it does, it's good. And I have to say, the ACLU has finally caught the attention of the Northern California ACLU, Peter Gelblum, the president of the local chapter, and also apparently a director up at the Mountain Community Theater. I realized that when I went to one of their productions. The same guy who kicked me out of ACLU meetings and closed them up 5 or 10 years ago. I don't know if their meeting structure has changed. They may still be doing their same elitist gig when they meet. But they've got people who are angry and kicking ass, like Abby Samuels, who are on their board, and who aren't content with just attending meetings. She's out there doing cop watching, keeping an eye on, well, for example, what's happening today in the Benchlands. By the time you hear this, apparently, I don't know if it's going to be maybe over for the day, but it won't necessarily be over at all for the Benchland folks. I got a warning from Greg Benson, a resident of the Benchlands, who you may have heard interviewed on some of my earlier netcasts, that the bulldozer has arrived to eliminate people in encampments there who are not meeting nebulous standards as the city shovels people into the Benchlands and eliminates other campsites, while at the same time proclaiming it's about to eliminate the Benchlands within a month or two. And if you look, it looks like some sort of... it's a huge, compacted area with less and less space. That's what I saw yesterday as I walked there. Anyway, on with the OVO article before I get lost here completely. Although according to the CCC, that's the Coastal Commission, that ban, the OVO, would greatly affect coastal public access and fully eliminate a large portion, 54% it estimates, of oversized vehicle parking areas in the coastal zone. While the commission had previously said the ban would have insignificant impact, it reversed course last week. Actually, the commission didn't reverse course. The commission hadn't even heard about it. The Coastal Commission staff reversed course. And in 2016, the same thing happened. Not the staff didn't reverse course. They were rah-rah bric-a-braca for eliminating OVOs, or for eliminating, getting the law, passing the law, but eliminating the RVs in the Santa Cruz City area. But the Coastal Commission, the broader Coastal Commission, said, no, this is a significant issue, and overruled their staff. This time the staff apparently got a little embarrassed and said, we're changing our mind. They didn't change their mind, though, when they saw the OVO law, and it was pretty much the same law, except for the addition of this storage spaces, token storage spaces that would in no way accommodate even the homeless population that it claims to be concerned about as part of the much ballyhooed but very, essentially, it's window dressing for enforcement in the same old get-out-of-town, hide-out or get-out way. But to reiterate, the local Coastal Commission is refusing, Coastal Commission enforcement staff is refusing to follow the supposed orders of its parent body, the actual larger Coastal Commission, which came down with its decision in 2016. It was strengthened by an additional law or administrative ruling that had to do with adding social justice as a consideration, which made it even more important that poor people and homeless people and the community generally, that the Coastal Commission consider issues of social justice here, which was one of the main points I made when I appealed both last time and then supported the appeal this time. And so it's really clear the Coastal Commission has to be given the same kind of pressure that the ACLU and the Disability Rights Coalition was giving giving them when this whole thing came up for an appeal. And the problem with that is that often the ACLU doesn't want to do anything until it's a very specific legal issue. So, for instance, we haven't seen an injunction against the city for its abusive treatment of people throughout the city who are in different encampments and now herded into the benchlands like so many disabled cattle. And it could have been done under the Martin versus Boise ruling and probably various other concerns like, you know, the right to travel, right to privacy, the COVID emergency that was still considered to be happening as new variants of COVID spread. Hasn't been done because the ACLU, at least we keep hearing this, it's sort of mouthed by Keith McHenry and Alicia Kuhl. Oh, they're waiting for the right moment, or we're waiting for the ACLU, and I'm waiting for them. And this is not to disparage, and I have to always add this, the good work that the ACLU, Disability Rights, Food Not Bombs, and the whatever remains of the California Homeless Union in Santa Cruz does. But obviously, more pressure and more action is needed, and I have to say Huff isn't taking a very strong stand either. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, or let's say it's taking a strong paper and verbal stand. We talk a lot about it, but we don't do much about it, and I complain about it in these broadcasts. We occasionally circulate petitions, and I provide flyers that recommend strategies for addressing the police as they come and try to move you away, but, you know, that's very limited. Let's take a musical break.
Just give me the one power of the sun. Give me the steady flow of a waterfall. Give me the spirit of living things. Say return to clay.
In time. There's so much to gain, so much to lose. Every one of us has a choice.
Just give me the Lord, the power of the sun, the power of the steady flow of the waterfall. Give me the spirit of living things as they return to clay. Just give me the restless power of the wind. Give me the comforting glow.
And that was Peter, Paul, and Mary at a 25th anniversary concert. Power, the name of the song. Rare, maybe not so rare. I don't hear it much these days. Anti-nuclear song, anti-nuclear power song. So it's back to the Lookout article, Lookout Santa Cruz on the OVO defeat at the Coastal Commission. Although not a final defeat, they're likely to show up again. First, there'll be a city council meeting the second Tuesday in August, and they will probably attempt to amend the ordinance. Who knows what they're going to do, but that's this, the suggestion of Reggie Meisler, who I may have more for you from him later in the show. Anyway, the article continues. We hope the city council moves to offer services without criminalization in the defeat of this ordinance, said Santa Cruz Cares in a statement posted to Instagram on Thursday. Councilmember Renee Golder said that while the new ruling came as a bit of a surprise, not to me, really, although, I tend to be very pessimistic, but it was simply following up on their 2016 ruling, as well as now that challenge has been backed by stronger organizations, at least more moneyed organizations, and those who hire more lawyers, like the ACLU and the Disability Rights Coalition. It seemed more likely that the Coastal Commission would pay attention. Perhaps. I mean, who can really judge what their motivations are? I don't know. Not me. We're moving forward with all our services that we can, like the Safe Parking Program, she said. This is Renee Golder, adding that the city has not yet discussed a response. We're in recess and haven't had a formal meeting with the city attorney or manager. Bottom line, it's just too early to know. City Attorney Tony Condotti said that's likely to change come August. I do anticipate we'll be discussing the ordinance once the council returns from recess, he said. The commission's ruling is only the latest roadblock for the controversial ordinance. In September, then-Vice Mayor Sonia Bruner and council members Shebra, Colantari, Johnson, and Golder first presented the OVO to the council. Presentations from city staff also discussed environmental and health impacts of allowing these vehicles on the street. How about the health impacts of denying people access to the coast? I guess we're not going to mention that, huh? The ordinance partially resulted from the city's revamped camping policies from spring 2021 and reinvigorated push on homelessness issues. Let's say, that is to say, getting rid of the homeless from our visible streets area, which they don't put that way, of course. Local conversation has been animated since the ordinance's November passing, with a number of West Side residents claiming hazardous conditions and environmental concerns, while homeless advocates have described the proposed legislation as criminalizing homeless. So a few days back, I got word that there was a protest happening down on Beach Street because folks who were vending, who wanted to continue vending there, apparently been doing some vending without incident, were suddenly getting tickets under the no vending on Beach Street, I guess, three-month pause, as you're going to hear this one vendor describes it. I had heard from Reggie Meisler that there was going to be a protest. He wasn't sure about it. This was on Saturday. And I tracked it down through a couple of people, and finally we went out there to find out what was going on. He didn't find a protest, but did run into a vendor, a fellow named Glenn, and we caught up with him near the Yan Flower restaurant and chatted with him, and this is the chat that I had with him. Do you mind if I interview you? Today is July 16th, I think. It's Saturday anyway. I'm here at Spruce and Pacific at the Yan Flower parking lot with
Glenn.
And Glenn, you're a man who's got a rolling cart emblazoned with various stickers. I don't see any political stickers or stickers about human rights. What is this about? A tourist thing?
I'm not sure. Per Senate Bill 946, all art vendors are legally able to vend on any public street.
Not in Santa Cruz.
In the state of California, the Senate Bill 946
says. Special city.
Yeah, we are, very much. So, we are trying to advocate for our rights, that we have the right to sell artwork.
And you do
on
this.
Public streets. We've done this for 6 years.
You are inside or outside yourself? As far as a living accommodation?
Outside.
And that's probably a trial in and of itself.
Yeah, the business is inside, but myself is inside, is outside.
Right. So, now you said, I think you told me that today you had planned a protest, and yet already apparently police preempted you by ticketing one guy and
Before I even got there.
And do you know the name of the guy ticketed, if you want to say? You don't have to.
He has artwork as well that he makes himself. Is all I got to say about that, because I do have the right to the Fifth Amendment.
Yeah.
And, you know, he makes artwork.
Are you a communist? Is that what this is?
No, sir. He is a local artist as well.
Has he been ticketed before?
No, I am one of the two that have been, or one of the three that have been ticketed.
When were you ticketed?
I was ticketed on the 22nd
and
of last month.
Okay. And describe the circumstances of your ticket. Did the police officer offer you a cup of coffee with the ticket? Or?
No, it was a municipal code violation.
And what time of day did it happen?
10:49.
And where were you?
On the corner of Beach and Pacific.
Were you hitting people with a bat?
Definitely not.
Were you blocking the sidewalk?
Definitely not.
Were you littering by throwing your stickers all over the whole the road?
Definitely not. I actually pick up my trash. I pick up other people's trash.
You were alarming children with pornographic stickers.
Definitely not.
But what were you doing then?
I was putting food on my son's table. Potentially putting food on my son's table, but unfortunately, the city council and the city of Santa Cruz has now not allowed that to happen. My profits from last summer during COVID craziness has went a quarter of profits by them mandating us to be downtown instead of allowing us to vend on Beach Street.
Now, I see you have your vending cart here. It's it sort of looks, you know, like a, it's got placards along the side, a lot of Santa Cruz, Jurassic Shark type circle, you know, stickers, Volkswagen stickers. I don't see any Volvo stickers here. Turtle stickers, mermaid stickers, deer stickers. I don't know what else we've got.
270 degrees all the way around, man.
It's apparently, you hear that, 270 degrees all the way around. I can't describe all the, whether it's pickles, death's heads, angels, devils, lions, you name it. But there's no...
Something for everybody.
There's no pictures of...
Something for everybody. There's no pictures of anything.
No pictures of me, for one thing.
No.
Nor of you.
No. No, it's all custom artwork.
How's the business? I mean, let me put it this way. When you were... You said Pacific
Avenue... Well, on the record, then... When we talk business on the record, that's off the record.
That's off the record. Let's skip. What I'm just question asking is not so much.
Okay, but just too many questions.
Oh, well, that's my business is questions. That's the reason I ask all these questions.
I understand that.
But you can always say no comment. You know, that's a favorite comment of people who don't want to answer questions for various reasons. I guess the reason I'm wondering is, I've been concerned about harassment of vendors on Pacific Avenue as well. Have you experienced any of that?
On Pacific Avenue, yes. Why? Because I was followed for about 400 yards by the consulting company, CSG, that the city hired to consult on the vending, the street vending particularly. And I was harassed and I have been harassed multiple times now by CSG, and they have at one point followed me for 400 yards taking videotapes of me without my consent. When I said, please stop videotaping me, do you work for the city? He had no badge, he had nothing, but he continued to follow me and videotape me.
How long ago was this?
That was on the 22nd. And I said that, sir, I feel like I'm being harassed at this moment. I do not like this. I do not like this. I don't need you following me. I don't want you following me. I'm going to Pacific Avenue. And then when I got to Pacific Avenue, where my permit is for, I still
you
got...
You do have a permit.
Yes, I do have a permit.
How much was a permit?
It was too much money, yeah. Put it that way.
Over $100?
Yes, it was ridiculous, okay? And we entered the lottery and everything, and I'm not a racist. My son's half black, but, you know, they gave all the Mexicans who's selling the same shit, they gave them the permits, not the local artist, which is very, very wrong, and, in my humble opinion.
Did the Mexican artists get anything?
They're not artists. They're not selling any sort of art. They're selling goods. They're selling goods that they bought overseas. They're not producing it like we do. We have our own print shop here. We have our own print machine. Everything. We put it into the files ourselves. He draws it himself. It's artwork. Yes, it is stickers, but it is artwork. Mm-hmm. And so... But they gave them the permits, not us.
Now, was this true several years ago, or is this a recent development?
Well, several years ago is when it all started.
Now, had you previously been... When did you begin your own work trying to vend on the boardwalk?
6 years ago.
And was that...
6 years ago. 6 years ago.
That was 6 years ago. And was there a reason this began... It didn't begin beforehand because you were new to the trade... Or was there some prohibition previously, or was there some other situation?
COVID.
Since COVID began, of course,
COVID began...
2019.
They
2020, actually.
They shut everybody... They used to tell us that we had to vend by the bike lanes and, you know, all this stuff. Oh, you can't have it on the benches. Okay. Oh, no, now you got to go over here. All right, whatever. We did whatever they asked, and then this year... No, you can't vend on Beach Street. Which, per Senate Bill 946, I beg to differ.
Now, had you vended before the Senate bill that permitted vending statewide?
Yes.
And had were you harassed prior to that?
No.
Because I know you're citing this law, which I agree with you, although I'm not as knowledgeable about it as you are, that, you know, permits it statewide and stops them from going after vendors. I was also aware that they had an anti-vending law before then that was pretty nasty.
But it's specifically art. Senate Bill 946 is specifically for artwork. This is artwork. Yes, it is displayed as a sticker and it is sold as a sticker. But it's equivalent to busking.
Well, it could be. I'm thinking of a different bill then. Because I know there was a bill in January of 2019 that allowed, it said if you're going to pass rules against vending, you cannot specify different kinds of goods.
Thank you.
Yeah. In other words, it didn't necessarily, it didn't protect art per se, but it said no, you've got to do it across the board. And I was wondering is, because I know the city had some really weird laws about vending before that. Were you vending before that
yes.
law? And were they enforcing those weird laws against you?
Yes, they were.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
They have been harassing us as a business. Okay, as a business, we have our state license, we have our sales permit, we have our vendor's permit, we have everything that they ask of us.
But you don't have a good lawyer, but you're willing to spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars on it.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, well, that's always a problem. And I'm keeping you here because I know you want to get to the protest, which you apparently are going to carry on single-handedly at the moment. Maybe not. Maybe show folks will show.
It's a peaceful process, and, you know, if people want to vend their artwork like they're able to do, like any able-bodied human being should be able to do in the state of California.
That they should have access to your artwork if they want.
Exactly. If they want to, that's their choice. And if any of the businesses around Beach Street, that's their own business problem. Because if they can't compete with us as street vendors, then that's their own problem. They have a problem with the establishment themselves if people want to buy from us.
I'm going to ask you more questions, but I'm reluctant to because I don't want to keep you. How are you feeling? Do you want to get going, or do you want me to ask you more questions? I can call you up.
I'm very, very frustrated with the system.
Are you? But am I saying is, do you need to get going, or should I continue talking to you?
I don't need to get going. I need to make money.
Indeed.
Which is what the city is cutting out my profits to put food on my son's table by a quarter. A quarter of my profits from last summer during COVID.
As you've said, but I guess what I'm saying is your primary purpose coming out today, given the fact that the city has shown disregard for the rights of vendors, is
poor people. Poor people.
And poor people.
Quit harassing poor people. I'm not on drugs. You got San Lorenzo Park right there with all these drug addicts over there and stuff, and you guys let that happen, but you want to, have control over us like we're doing something wrong or illegal?
Indeed. But yet you are here understanding as you head to the boardwalk that because of a ticket you've already heard about this morning, you may well be stopped by police.
I will, and I am acceptant to my second ticket. If I get a second ticket, it will be $200. My first ticket was $100.
Wonderful.
I am aware of that, and I am willing to take that risk. Why? Because I need to put food on my son's table.
And I'm going to call you up to get more details. I'm not going to struggle with the traffic again down there because I'm not on foot. I'm in this mobile machine here. But I will call you up to get your update if you feel like telling me. Assuming you're at liberty, which I assume they're just going to fuck with you some more with a ticket if they do.
Yeah.
But I think
more power to them, I have my power as a human being.
I say less power to them and more power to you and the vendors, but that's...
I don't mind. I'm not trying to fight the city. I want the city to understand where we're coming from as local artists who's trying to put food on the table. That's it. We're not causing any sort of distractions, and we're not harassing anybody, we're not causing any violence, we're not doing... People appreciate the artwork, people appreciate the stickers, they love them.
Now, if somebody wants to contact you to be supportive of your rights here, or the protest that you may be following up on, what do you suggest they do?
Contact the city council.
The city council's number is 420-5020 for those who are interested, area code 831. Grab your pencils. 420-5020. There's no guarantee, of course. In fact, there's very little guarantee. They're going to do shit with what, even listen to what you say. But presumably, if enough people call in, it may cause a stir. Because I know 3 years ago, you may have been a part of that. Thank you. Whoa. 3 years ago, there was, of course, a march by the vendors. And there was a whole...
Which caused violence.
Really? Tell me about
it. It was protest. And
I should ask you about that later.
Well, it wasn't a peaceful protest. It wasn't people just selling their artwork. That's all we're trying to do is just distribute and sell our artwork and have people appreciate it. People appreciate it. Kids, grandmas, everybody, all spectrums of life. But... when there's hot dog vendors who are blocking off the streets, yeah, that's different. That's not what we're doing.
No, I understand.
Selling our artwork. We're just selling our artwork.
So have other people been, has there been a general ban from Beach Street that they're trying to do, supposedly?
Yes, and it's specifically for 3 months in the prime time of when...
During the summer.
Yes, correct. When I actually am able to make money to save for the winter for my son.
Now, are other people ignoring this ban and they're being ignored by the city?
Not to my knowledge.
Everybody has been cleared off.
Everybody has been cleared off. The only few people like myself are saying no. this is not fair, this is not right, and it's not true.
Now, 2 or 3 years ago, as you know, there were a bunch of people who actually marched to City Hall. Were you a part of that group at that time?
No, I was not.
Do you think that they had legitimate concerns?
Of course. If they were marching then of course they had legitimate concerns at that point in time.
Now we'll be coming in soon.
Now we're on a different. It's a whole different time.
Some pot stickers to fortify you in this journey.
No, it's fine.
Yeah. Okay. And again, we've been talking with. Okay. Thank you, man, for talking.
Right.
Yeah.
Seriously.
And at that point, the management of the Eon Flower came out. We were standing in their parking lot, and I think Glenn became a bit nervous, although he had said that they were familiar with him. He was eager, I guess, to press on to roll his cart to the beach area, where we later saw him. We drove by once and noticed he was there, apparently unmolested at the time we drove by. A lot of heavy traffic, so, and no place to park, so we couldn't really get closer. I couldn't get closer to see what was, to watch him over a period of time or interview people who were nearby. But his was the only business that I saw there on the sidewalk. And I think we may have spoken to him later. For some reason, I don't recall exactly the outcome, except I don't remember that he gave us, I don't think he gave us a call, and certainly, I'm sure of this, he didn't let us know that there were, the police showed up later in his case and went after him for vending. So maybe I can give more of a report when I learn more, and I will if I do.
Back when Eisenhower was the president, golf courses is where most of his time was spent. So I never really listened to what the president said, because in general I believed that the general was politically dead. But he always seemed to know when the muscles were about to be flexed. Because I remember him saying something, mumbling something about a military-industrial complex. Americans no longer fight to keep their shores safe, just to keep the jobs going in the arms-making workplace. And then they pretend to be gripped by some sort of political reflex. But all they're doing is paying dues to the military-industrial complex. Military and the monetary. Military and the monetary. Military and the monetary. The military and the monetary get together whenever they think it's necessary. They turn our brothers and sisters into mercenaries. They are turning the planet to a cemetery. The military and the monetary use the media as intermediaries. They are determined to keep the citizens secondary. They make so many decisions that are arbitrary. We're marching behind the commander-in-chief, who was standing under a spotlight shaking like a leaf. But the ship of state had landed on an economic reef, so we knew he was going to bring us messages of grief. The military and the monetary were shielded by January and went storming into February. Brought us pot-bellied generals as luminaries. 2 weeks ago, I hadn't heard the sumbitch, now all of a sudden, he's legendary. They took the honor from the honorary. They took the dignity from the dignitary. They took the secrets from the secretary, but they left the bench an obituary. The military and the monetary, from thousands of miles away in a Saudi Arabian sanctuary, had us all scrambling for our dictionaries because we couldn't understand the fucking vocabulary. Yeah, there were some smart bombs, but there were some dumb ones as well. Scared the hell out of CNN in that Baghdad hotel. The military and the monetary, they get together whenever they think it's necessary. War in the desert sometimes sure is scary, but they beamed out the war to all their subsidiaries. Tried to make it so damn insane a worthy adversary, keeping the citizens secondary, scaring old folks into coronaries. The military and the monetary, from thousands of miles in the Saudi Arabian sanctuary, kept us all wondering if all of this was really, truly necessary. got to work for peace. Peace ain't coming this way. If we only worked for peace, if everyone believed in peace the way they say they do, we'd have peace. The only thing wrong with peace is that you can't make no money from it. The military and the monetary, they get together whenever they think it's necessary. They're turning our brothers and sisters into mercenaries. They are turning the planet into a cemetery. We've got to work for peace. Peace ain't coming this way. We should not allow ourselves to be misled by talk of entering a time of peace. Peace is not the absence of war. It is the absence of the rumors of war and the threats of war and the preparation for war. Peace is not the absence of war. It is a time when we will all bring ourselves closer to each other, closer to building a structure that is unique within ourselves, because we have finally come to peace within ourselves. Military and the monetary. Military and the monetary. Military and the monetary. Get together whenever they think it's necessary. They have turned our brothers and sisters into mercenaries. They are turning parts of the planet into a cemetery. What you gonna do? Military and the monetary. Military and the monetary. What you gonna do? We hounded the Ayatollah religiously. Bombed Libya and killed Gaddafi's son hideously. We turned our back on our allies, the Panamanians, and saw Ali North selling guns to the Iranians, while Gorbachev slaughtering the Lithuanians. We better warn the Amish, they may bomb the Pennsylvanians. The military and the monetary. Get together whenever they think it's necessary. They have turned our brothers and sisters into mercenaries. They are turning the planet into a cemetery.
They got folks out there working for war. Make a whole lot of money, start a little trouble, it's war. Turn this planet in the north and south, it's war. Start a few rumors over there, make money with a war.
Peace. Say it to yourself.
I believe we got to work for peace. Peace ain't gonna be free.
I don't gotta work for peace.
Gil Scott Heron, Work for Peace. And here's a grim story from the July 16th Santa Cruz Sentinel. Medical examiner Jalen Walker was shot dozens of times, law enforcement, by Mark Gillespie, AP, Akron, Ohio. Jalen Walker, the 25-year-old black man who died last month at the hands of police in Akron, Ohio, was shot dozens of times with 26 bullets recovered from his body, according to a preliminary autopsy report released Friday. Dr. Lisa Kohler, the Summit County medical examiner, said it was impossible for her office to say which bullet killed Walker or the number of shots that were fired.
Walker had, quote, several very devastating injuries that would cause death, unquote, including injuries to his heart, lungs, and arteries, Kohler said. She tallied 41 entry wounds and 5 wounds from bullets that grazed Walker. Preliminary findings released earlier indicated Walker's body had more than 60 wounds. Greta Johnson, Summit County Communications Director, said Friday, it was very possible that one bullet could cause several different entrance wounds. Walker had 5 wounds in his back, but it's impossible to say whether those came as he ran away or turned as he was being shot, Kohler said. The medical examiner gave a summary of the report into Walker's death at a news conference. The report was finalized Thursday. The June 27th pursuit began when officers tried to pull him over for equipment violations. Authorities said Walker fired a gunshot from his car 40 seconds into the chase. Kohler said that no illegal drugs or alcohol were detected in Walker. The medical examiner's findings confirmed that Walker, unarmed and with no drugs or alcohol in his system, quote, came to a brutal, senseless death, said Ken Abarno, a lawyer representing Walker's family. Walker was remembered at his funeral Wednesday as a shy, kind, thoughtful man with a quiet sense of humor. Another lawyer for his family previously said Walker had been grieving the recent death of his fiancée, but his family had no indication of concern beyond that. And that was the story from the Santa Cruz Sentinel, July 16th, by Mark Gillespie, medical examiner. Jalen Walker was shot dozens of times. Notice no mention of the police officers who shot him, no mention of any action by the police department. And this, of course, was 2 weeks after he was shot. Here's a story from The Militant, which is a socialist newspaper, and it's from July 25th. Protests in Akron demand the truth about cop killing of Jalen Walker by Candace Wagner, July 25th. Akron, Ohio. As a family, we stand for nonviolence, but we encourage protest. Bobby DiCello, the attorney speaking for the family of Jalen Walker, said at a press conference here July 11th. Walker, 25, was gunned down in a hail of 90 bullets fired by 8 cops here June 27th after he got out of his car and ran from the cops. Much of this was caught on police body cameras. After a weekend of protests and more violence from police, Jalen Walker's family is calling for an immediate end to the aggressive, violent tactics being used by the Akron police against protesters, DiCello said. They are also calling for all curfews to be lifted and an end to the city's effort to blame Jalen for the horrific and unjustified shooting that took his life. Protesters shouldn't be going around tearing stuff up either, Pastor Robert DeJournette of the St. Ashward Temple of the Church of God in Christ said at the press conference. The police department should be acting in a nonviolent way as well. Police had stopped Walker for a minor traffic violation, but say he drove off and fired a shot from his car. At the end of a 7-minute police pursuit, they say he exited the car wearing a ski mask and tried to run away. Police claim they opened fire when he turned toward them and made a motion toward his waist. They kept firing even as he lay on the ground. Police admitted he was unarmed when he was killed. An unloaded gun, a bullet magazine, and a wedding ring were found in the car. He was handcuffed behind his back as he lay there dying. He was running away, Clinton Rogers, a retired Union Auto Workers Union member, told The Militant July 6th. There is a lot. That's a lot of shots for someone who'd never been in trouble with the law. I'd like to give the cops the benefit of the doubt, but really. Rogers said it's a ploy. They claim he was reaching for something. Cops say that all the time. Protests began after Walker was killed and increased when body camera footage was released July 3rd. That evening, some who joined the protests vandalized stores and vehicles in the downtown area. The next day, the mayor imposed a curfew, which is now in place, or was on the 25th, from 11 p.m. to 5 a.m. daily. Violence in the streets will accomplish nothing and will only bring more anguish to the community, the family said. Despite subsequent protests being overwhelmingly peaceful, police have fired tear gas and beaten some demonstrators. Police say Walker had fled a traffic stop by police in New Franklin the night before he was killed. Friends and family members say that Walker's actions were unusual for him. Walker, who had worked recently for DoorDash, was deeply affected by the death of his fiancée in a traffic accident the month before. DiCello told reporters, at this point in the investigation, there is no explanation for Walker's behavior the last 2 days of his life. The family wants to know what happened and seek justice for the excessive police response that led to the death of their son. And that was a story in The Militant. Here's a more recent story from, it looks like, NBC News. There's the NBC peacock. It's their symbol. It's entitled, On Jaylen Walker's 26th Birthday, His Family Demands Justice Department Investigate Officers Who Fatally Shot Him. Walker died in a hail of police gunfire in the early morning hours of June 27th, following a brief foot chase and car pursuit in Akron. Jaylen Walker's family on Wednesday, this is a story by David K. Lee, written on July 20th. Jaylen Walker's family on Wednesday demanded federal authorities take over the investigation of police officers who gunned down the black motorist last month in Akron. Walker's loved ones, making the appeal on what would have been his 26th birthday, said they didn't have confidence in the current probe led by the Ohio Bureau of Criminal Investigation. Family attorney Bobby DiCello said his clients are particularly concerned with a local police union leader speaking publicly in defense of the officers and sharing details of the chase that led to Walker's death. The Bureau of Criminal Investigation, the Attorney General's office, was brought in to maintain some form of trust, some form of integrity in this investigation, DiCello told reporters. That's what we were told, and you did not hear us initially ask for a different investigative body to get involved because we wanted to give that opportunity to the state to run its investigation. And we've given it that opportunity, and now we are calling for the Department of Justice to replace the Department or the Bureau of Criminal Investigation. The NAACP made a similar call for federal intervention last week. Representatives of the U.S. Department of Justice and the Akron Fraternal Order of Police could not be reached immediately for comment on Wednesday. A spokesman for the Bureau of Criminal Investigation pledged a thorough independent probe. BCI shall remain steadfast in our commitment to independent investigations regarding officer-involved shootings, and this case is no different, the BCI rep said in an investigation. The family and the community deserve a thorough, independent investigation, and that is what they will get. And here's the NAACP, well, this is AP News reporting on the NAACP's call for a federal investigation. It's by Michael Balsamo, July 14th. NAACP calls on Garland to probe killing of Jaylen Walker. Washington, AP. The NAACP, that's National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, on Thursday made a direct plea to Attorney General Merrick Garland for the Justice Department to open a federal civil rights investigation into the shooting death of Jaylen Walker, a black man who was killed last month by police in Ohio in a hail of police gunfire. NAACP President Derek Johnson said in a letter to Garland, Walker, who was unarmed when he was fatally shot, was executed by Akron, Ohio police officers for a traffic violation. He called on Garland to immediately open a federal investigation and said the officer should be held accountable to the fullest extent of the law. We are urging you and your Department of Justice to conduct a thorough investigation into the murder of Jaylen Walker, and if we all saw with our own eyes what we saw is true, federally charge the officers responsible for his gruesome assassination, Johnson wrote to Garland. The letter comes days before Kristen Clark, the Justice Department's top civil rights official, is set to speak about police accountability at the NAACP National Convention in New Jersey. As Attorney General, Garland has vowed to prioritize policing and civil rights and to combat racial discrimination, saying at his confirmation hearing that America doesn't yet have equal justice. Johnson previously met with Garland at the Justice Department's headquarters in Washington after a white gunman was accused of killing 10 black people in a racist attack at a supermarket in Buffalo, New York. The Justice Department said late Thursday it had no comment on Johnson's letter. The agency had previously said Prosecutors from the Civil Rights Division and the U.S. Attorney's Office in Ohio, along with the FBI, were closely monitoring and reviewing the circumstances surrounding Walker's death. The Justice Department had also said if evidence is uncovered that, quote, reveals potential violations of federal law, then prosecutors would, quote, take appropriate action, unquote. Walker was fatally shot by police on June 27th after authorities said officers had attempted to stop his car for traffic and equipment violations. The police said Walker drove off and led the officers on a brief car chase. Akron Police Chief Steve Milet said less than a minute into a pursuit, the sound of a shot was heard from the car, and a Transportation Department camera captured what appeared to be a muzzle flash coming from the vehicle. Walker eventually slowed down and jumped out of the vehicle as it continued to move. Officers pursued him on foot into a parking lot where authorities say Walker created a deadly threat, quote-unquote, that led to officers shooting him shortly after 1 a.m. Walker was not armed when the officers opened fire. A handgun, a loaded magazine, and an apparent wedding ring were found on the seat of the car. A casing consistent with the weapon was later found in the area where officers believed a shot had come from the vehicle, police said. It's not clear how many shots were fired by 8 officers involved, but video captured officers firing an array of bullets, and Walker sustained more than 60 wounds. An attorney for Walker's family had said officers kept firing even after he was on the ground and had handcuffed Walker before trying to provide first aid. If the officers' conduct did not scream just how inhumane and fatally dangerous they are, the very fact that they handcuffed his corpse speaks volumes, Johnson said. And, of course, in this story, there is also no mention of the names of the murdering officers. Interesting. And reading more stories from this issue, here's this from the Akron Beacon Journal. Chris Ramirez's story, Jaylen Walker's death sparked protests in Akron. What are your rights as a protester? Ongoing protests in Akron following the police shooting of Jaylen Walker have led the city to renewing its curfew on Thursday night. The curfew went into effect 10 p.m. until 6 a.m., spanning downtown Akron. It will remain in effect until the city issues another order that lifts it. Several protesters have already been arrested, including Breonna Taylor's aunt and Jacob Blake's father, both, of course, they have relatives that were murdered by police. Violating the curfew entails a fourth-degree misdemeanor and either a fine of $350 or up to 30 days in jail, or, of course, being shot dead by police armed with automatic weapons. Here's what you need to know about the curfew and your protest rights in Ohio. Are there exceptions to the curfew? Yes, but they're limited. Law enforcement, medical, and fire personnel are exempt, in addition to the news media. Ohioans fleeing dangerous circumstances, seeking medical care, or traveling between their home and work are also in the clear. Is it legal to protest in Ohio? Yes, but first check with your local mortician. Sorry about that, folks. Just a little joke. Yes, the First Amendment guarantees the right to assemble and protest. However, there are some limitations. According to the Ohio American Civil Liberties Union, protesters may not block traffic. Certain locations, including but not limited to private properties and certain parks or plazas, may also require permits to protest on. Impromptu protests are allowed within 2 days of an unfolding event, but organizers are still required to notify the Cleveland Division of Police at least 8 hours in advance. Are there protest rules in Ohio? Violent, obscene, or threatening speech is illegal under the First Amendment, and endangering others could result in arrest. Don't antagonize or touch law enforcement, and be mindful of drugs or weapons. These could result in additional charges if arrested. Can I record the police? You can, and police cannot search cell phones without a warrant. Keep in mind that whatever is said to the police can be used against an individual, and law enforcement can authorize an arrest if you fail to identify yourself upon being asked. That's not the case in California, as far as I know, so far, though it's often wisest, the ACLU advises, though they're not always the best source, to say who you are, but you don't have to produce ID. nor do you actually have to identify yourself, provided you simply say, am I being arrested? Am I being detained? What's the charge? Okay. But you don't have to say who you are. But given the massive data banks that currently exist, they're likely to figure out how you are pretty quickly. And you will be obliged to put your thumbprint if you're being booked or even if you're not being booked. Additionally, you do not have, this is in Ohio, to agree to an officer searching you or your car. The Cleveland Legal Aid Society urges protesters to be vocal about their consent or their non-consent. Law enforcement is still allowed to conduct pat-downs but not searches if they suspect an individual may be armed. And finally, what do I do if arrested in Ohio? Being arrested and released on bail from start to finish can last up to 36 hours, and I think it can last over the weekend here in Santa Cruz. The police will ask for basic information, followed by a court agency interview to determine bail. You do not need to answer the agency's questions. You can request for an attorney, but doing so accurately will move the process faster. The Ohio ACLU said the main types of crimes a protester is charged with are minor misdemeanor offense, and a felony offense. Officers may also detain, not arrest, protesters for suspected involvement in criminal activity. And that's what you have in these United States of America if you are in Akron, Ohio. But closer to home, here's a gloomy story, for me anyway, gloomy. Makes me gloomy. Santa Cruz County to end pandemic penny bail releases by Jessica Jerk, or as she calls herself, Jessica A. York. I probably shouldn't be so harsh to poor Jessica. I'm not aware that this story critically contains any inaccuracies, but she's generally not very good on homeless issues. This is a story, of course, about jail and bail, and that often affects folks who are homeless because they run afoul of police prejudices and anti-homeless laws here. Santa Cruz County is set to end its coronavirus pandemic-instigated zero or penny bail schedule August 1st. Statewide, jails on April 6, 2020, began whittling down their inmate populations after the Judicial Council of California issued a series of public health and safety emergency orders in response to the widespread outbreak, including an emergency bail schedule that became effective April 13th of 2020. In response, local court systems required jails to set bail for all misdemeanor and felony offenses at $0, with several exceptions for crimes such as serious or violent felonies. In order to clarify that inmates were not being held without bail, jail records show the bail amount as 0.01, which is 1 cent. Birthing the shorthand penny bail. Unlike many lingering COVID-19 emergency orders, the Judicial Council emergency bail order quickly was repealed statewide, effective June 20th, 2020, a couple months after it was put into effect. Santa Cruz County, similar to many counties across the state, however, has maintained the practice for more than 2 years. Every court has the control over their own bail schedule, said Alex Calvo, court executive officer for the Santa Cruz County Superior Court. We, like many courts in the state, continue to operate with what's called the emergency $0 bail schedule that we feel that this is the right time to resume going back to the previous. Pay up or stay locked up. That's how I would describe it. That's not Calvo's comment. Calvo expanded on what he said constitutes the right time to reinstitute traditional bail rates. He said the joint decision by the court system's judges looked at the factors such as jail population and prevalence of COVID-19 in the jails, as well as a general drive toward resumption of normal operations court system-wide. And scanning ahead in this article, I see absolutely no information on the amount of COVID-19 in the jail at this time. So, nice work, Jessica Jerk. Yes, you are Jessica Jerk for not getting such information and putting it into this story, if that's one of their primary justifications for reinstituting bail that will keep people crammed together in jail. But here's some more from the story.
Calvo said judges have become more comfortable in allowing an increasing population at downtown Santa Cruz's main jail. Well, after all, those judges aren't in the jail, although perhaps they should be. That population dropped from an average 120% population capacity, that is to say they have 20% more people than they should have, to a low of 57% in April 2020, with the nearby immediate release of 67 inmates, and has since risen, dipping only to 67% of capacity during several months in the past 2 years. The main jail has come up to an average of 85% full in the past year, compared to about 88% in 2021, according to the sheriff's office reports. In part, the forced inmate reduction allowed corrections officials to space out inmates, isolate new arrivals, and quarantine those testing positive with COVID-19. Asked how the jail system will continue to manage that effort with a larger population, Sheriff's Office spokesperson Ashley Keene said the response will be dictated by the number of infected inmates. Again, we don't get to know the number of infected inmates, nor do we hear anything from the inmates themselves. Nice reporting, Jessica Jerk. Moving on. We have worked closely with public health and our contracted medical services provider, WellPath, to do our best to contain an outbreak, Keene wrote in an email to the Sentinel. Our staff has worked with our partners on plans to manage an outbreak should the need arise. And no record of whether there was a history of an outbreak or what things were like throughout this last two-year period. According to a monthly statistics report posted to its website by the Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Office, the jail population of four facilities reached nearly 66% of its maximum capacity in June, the same number as the overall average during the past 12 months. These statistics, however, are skewed by the regularly vacant Blaine Street facility, which is rated for a 32 inmate capacity and an unpopulated Blaine Street facility, which has averaged 22% of capacity in the past year. In other words, it looks like they're housing less people than they are because they're treating cells that they're intentionally keeping empty and adding that to the statistical totals. So what they're then doing is cramming more people into the cells that aren't empty and claiming that they're under capacity, and so nothing to worry about, nothing to look at here, keep moving. Preparing for a population increase, I'm going to kind of skip ahead with this story. The Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Office expects to see an inmate population increase after August 1st, and we are prepared to manage that, Kian said. They're going to be managed. Well, they're planning, I guess, to lock up all the folks they drive out of the benchlands, perhaps. Interesting. They aren't saying that, of course. That's my paranoid speculation. And you can read more of the story if you either want to buy the Sentinel, or you might find some of it online. And there is a quote from one of the public defenders. Separately, the new Santa Cruz County Public Defender's Office has scheduled a launch of a new pilot program for August 1st. The idea behind the new early representation program is to send public defender staff into the jails shortly after inmates' arrests and before their first court appearance to determine eligibility for indigent services. And blah, yada, yada, yada. They're praising the Public Defender's Office, the new one. And that actually was the subject of one of our Huff members' commentary at the Huff meeting today. We had a meeting earlier today of Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which meets every Thursday from 10:45 in the morning to 1 or 1:15 in the afternoon, depending on how resistant, tired, or insistent some of us are. But here's what public defender Heather Rogers says. For those of us that are actually there, the jail is still full, Rogers said. I wish it were one of those things where advocates walked in and it was no one, nothing to do here. But the truth is that there's going to be more than we can do, even with three advocates. All of the reforms are being rolled back, and I have a feeling that, sadly, this population is going to need us more than ever, Rogers added. The day that we launch this pilot, I have no doubt there will be plenty of clients to serve in the county jail who are wondering what's going to happen next. What with bail resumed is my addition to that. That's, again, a story in the today's Santa Cruz Sentinel, July 21st, by Jessica York, who I continue to describe as Jessica Jerk, or Yak Yak, or a megaphone for existing authorities, generally speaking, with a little tiny bit of opposition put in the last two or three paragraphs. And it's Santa Cruz County to end pandemic penny bail releases. Let's take a musical break, shall we?
Missiles flying in the third world towards the people stranded on their knees. Bombs falling over Baghdad, killing children who are starving by degrees. There are those of us who'd question, what's the goal and what's the cost? 600,000 dead malnourished children, a UN-sanctioned Holocaust. Missiles flying in the third world, from Hanoi to Wounded Knee. Bombs falling over Baghdad, and each one shouts, democracy. Contras, kings and generals, brandish stars and stripes. From Rangoon to Los Angeles, selling oil, guns and crack pipes. Missiles flying in the third world, and each one will kill a child. Bombs falling over Baghdad, and hunger and death is running wild. We had to destroy the village in order to save it, to help this jungle grow. First we had to pave it. And starts are everywhere. From the mountains of Chiapas to the streets of Central Square, empires fall. This one will too. So here's to the day when this one is through.
That was old David Rovix, or perhaps a younger David Rovix, Contras, Kings, and Generals. So at today's Huff meeting, which I mentioned earlier, we heard, we're not sure if it's rumors or an accurate prediction, of a possible sweep of part of the benchlands, cramming it into even smaller space, system that was used in previous years to essentially as a preliminary to a completely eliminating the benchlands as a campground. It happened during the Occupy movement in the fall of 2011, and I think it also happened, and I'm not as clear about this, in 2017, 2018, 2019, thereabouts, even before COVID, when Andy Mills sent people to the benchlands because of a hepatitis epidemic down south that he worried might spread here. and also because people were becoming so numerous and visible in public places that it was just becoming embarrassing. My goodness. And there were a lot of protests happening, which he stopped at the City Hall, the Freedom Sleepers protest. But then people started clustering around the post office. Oh, my God, they're like locusts. What can you do? These homeless people and their protester friends. My God. Anyway, there's concern that there's going to be a sweep any day now, and there's some thoughts about it being Monday. So some of us will be in the benchlands Monday at 10 o'clock in order to keep an eye on things, and also to perhaps provide some literature, some petitions, maybe register a few voters, play a little chess, perhaps, do a little tabling, because there is, of course, the promise of City Mangler, who calls himself the city manager, Matt Huffaker, to completely eliminate the benchlands as a survival encampment at the end of the summer, sending them off to, I guess, Never Never Land, possibly, or maybe 5 miles off the coast. I'm not sure what his plan is. I don't think he is either. But that's the kind of double talk or cover story he's giving to the city council, which will be meeting the second Tuesday in August after having taken its traditional vacation for the summer throughout July. But, of course, not providing any additional real shelter for the majority of homeless people in Santa Cruz. Just frightening them with more tales of terror and packing them into the benchlands to use one of former Mayor Sugar's most notorious metaphors, like sardines. You got to be kind of a real old-timer and an activist to understand what that metaphor is about. But it's actually kind of a familiar metaphor. It means when you cram people in so closely that they can hardly breathe. And that's what's happening in the benchlands now. What you're going to hear now is an interview with, well, some of my commentary, followed by an interview with Greg Benston, who lives in the benchlands. And here we go. So it's a sunny afternoon, cool, 5 o'clock on July 20th, and looks like the benchlands tent area water side of the bridge has been cleared. Howdy. And there's a lot of by water side of the bridge, I mean between the what was the edge of the campground and a kind of a secondary campground that formed mostly under the Water Street Bridge, but up to the porta-potties, dumpsters, and so forth that kind of marked the limit right near Water Street of the encampment, the benchlands encampment. That had all been forcibly removed and dispersed or kind of packed into the benchlands, which is looks increasingly, as I said, sardine tight. Packed tents on both sides of the aisle, so to speak. More closely than I remembered the last time I was here, probably about a month ago. Most of the tents are pretty much enclosed, and they're in groups covered by tarps. Beware of the dog sign posted in one tent. And again, it looks like these tents are sort of hunkered down for long time servicing. They are compacted. Maybe that some of them are multiple tents, many of them, in fact, kind of under one canopy or tarp. Still, they aren't sprawled out much. But there is a bit of sprawl. There are some areas covered with bikes. We see at least three shopping carts here in front of one.
talk a bit about it. I'll be playing it tomorrow night. But I can also advise people what, because they're coming to the meeting there.
Right. It's kind of and it's interesting to know.
We're talking with
Greg down at San Lorenzo Park.
And it's about July, well, it is July 20th, about 5:05. And, Greg, you say there's, by bulldozer, do you mean to remove a particular area or some sort of general pressing?
Typically, it's been that we've kind of, they've picked certain places that needed a little bit of remediation, alteration, or they were just abandoned, and we, with neighbors, would figure out which ones were
Tennessee!
We would figure out which places consensus agreed that should be actually bulldozed, and so it was a mutual
consensus
just the neighbors, you know. So it was the city workers, and then the police, and a lot of stuff. It's fine to remove it, and as long as people get the orange tag and have 3 days to fix their stuff, and it's clearly communicated and evenly, not arbitrarily assigned to different locations.
Now, we're near your campsite.
Yep.
You're pointing to, I guess you've moved right across the aisle.
Well, I used to be there a long time ago. I've been over here for about a year probably.
You're pointing to the
one with the
aft side of the area.
Yeah, on the
county buildings, or the park side, you might say.
Yeah, not the riverside, but
do you have office hours, or are you
24 hours a day, 7 days a week?
Are you usually in, or are you out and about?
Out and about. Out and about, and I'd like to just be able to go to the beach or do something. Currently, leaving your spot for 15 minutes, you never know when, because they've changed the conditions under which your camp can be eradicated.
Tell me about that.
Well, it was that you would get an orange sticker. They would come through and they would assign an orange sticker a notice to vacate, but they've been giving us, this is their general practice, they've been giving us 3 days to fix it or fuck it. And people were operating pretty well within that and learning what the standards were, you know, because they don't print out anything specific about what kind of standards, so we have to guess. But we kind of know. But
how did
now,
that change?
Well, they've shifted it to, I haven't heard anybody, I've only heard a city employee saying it, that if a reasonable person believes that your campsite is a health hazard or some other, you know, undefined term. So you multiply these undefineds and you get nothing.
How many campsites would you say have been removed in the last week?
I'd say this week, I don't know of any that were completely removed that we hadn't known would happen and agreed upon, but there were things that were seized and carried away, or it's kind of like the pecking away at people's property that's been happening this past week. But
well, I do notice that.
I know in the past, but the previous week, James, the guy in the wheelchair, the older guy in the wheelchair, St. James, he calls himself.
I'm familiar with him.
Yeah, he's very very intelligent, good guy. He is in a wheelchair, and he's one that's been, and this little narrative I'm going to frame around this is important, because he was denied access to the armory or to the camp, the overlook, the city overlook camp, which is what they're trying to say is the alternative to being here. He was denied that because he was too medically sensitive or medically vulnerable.
Remember, you mentioned this at the Huff meeting.
Yeah, and that's kind of upsetting, because they say he's too medically vulnerable to be there, but yet, so therefore they want him to be here. And when he is here, he leaves for 30 minutes to go to the bank, and with his wheelchair, it takes a little while, and he comes back, and his place had been bulldozed because he wasn't. And this was, he didn't have an orange sticker. He hadn't been given any warning. And usually we neighbors would be looking out for him, and if there was an orange sticker, we'd make sure we took care of things. But when you simply leave and you come back and your place is destroyed.
Was his the only camp destroyed?
No, there were, Katie's was. I shouldn't be mentioning names. Yeah, there were other people that definitely did have their camp, their entire camps removed. Just a second, Tennessee.
In the last two weeks, how many people have been? When did James's get removed?
That was 2 weeks ago, or 2.5 weeks ago, I suppose.
And the other folks that you mentioned?
Same day, the ones that were absolutely removed.
Anybody else that's removed since the 2 weeks period?
Not completely removed, but the current stickers that we've, the orange stickers, the notice to vacate stickers have been. I wish there was one handy right here, but. They've been checking the last box, which is like other, in terms of reasoning. And it's hard to react to vagueness.
It's hard to correct that, in other words.
Yes. I mean, you know, because if we are given operating, instructions, we will either refute them and deal with them through channels, or we will fix it.
How has the camp grown in the last 2 weeks, would you say?
How is it grown?
If it has, it looks like it's grown to me.
Oh yeah, they crushed the stuff. They removed the stuff that was underneath the bridge down there, which was just a natural. If you could find a spot that you would put a tent that you can't touch your neighbor with a pool cue, have a great time camping here. But you can't find such a thing. And so what they did is they took a location where our overflow, which was created from them closing the armory, and they closed the Oceana Hotel for medically vulnerable seniors, and told them specifically that this
previously Hell's Trail.
I wish I could. Can I take you over to a tent that was given by the city to those people that were kicked out of the Oceana?
How far away is it?
Right over there.
Sure. Walk me
and,
over.
You'll see some of the absurdity, because this is a.
But walk me slowly.
We can walk quite slowly.
You're a vigorous fellow.
Well, because when there's a target out there, I go get it. But so while we're walking there, and we're walking right down the center path right now in San Lorenzo Park.
The path has gotten narrower, I notice.
It has, and that actually is a legitimate problem that we need to self-police. We don't need to have the cops come and tell us what to do. We ought to be taking care of it ourselves. That's too far out. A number of tents are.
Doesn't look like it's blocking anything.
No, but we have agreed upon a certain space down the middle so that emergency vehicles.
Who's we? I mean, you actually have a group that meets, or is
no,
it?
No. That's the funny thing is that there, I mean, nobody comes out and attends any sort of a group meeting. But we do communicate amongst ourselves and. But people are left out in that way.
How many people would you estimate are here now?
350.
And on what basis are you saying that?
Just kind of an average of what the Homeless Persons Health Project, HPHP, and some outreach social workers and police and city. Just my gut instinct based upon. Numbers, we had firm numbers, and then just knowing that they have expanded.
How many folks have arrived in the last week that you find you could not have given space to, or that you personally know about?
Wow. You see people on the hillsides up here. I could show you an area that there's people on the hillside, and previously that was out of bounds.
Boundary has expanded.
Yeah. And then they closed the place underneath the bridge where there were probably 20 to 30 tents. And they gave them only 3 days to vacate.
Where did they go? Any idea?
They either went up probably to up into the woods and to the beaches and into doorways or on the hillside here. So they just increased the density of this place that's already beyond capacity. And that's...
How does this impact sanitary facilities here?
They have not added any
Porta-potties.
Porta-potties.
Wash stations.
Yeah,
wash Shower stations. Still comes once a week.
Showers come once a week. And they were coming twice a week for a little bit, but they've gone back to once a week. And
many deaths in the camp in the last couple weeks.
Couple, and I lost a really good friend a couple days ago. And
anything you want to say about this person?
We're just still trying to. It took us a couple days to make sure, or a day and a half to make sure it was him, because we've had false reports and people end up showing up alive, and which we're joyous about. But this guy turned out to be the real deal, dead and gone. And
name of the person?
Pete, Iron Pete. Mm-hmm. And
anything you want to say about Iron Pete?
He was a hardworking guy. He actually used to be an iron worker. That's why where he got his nickname. It wasn't self applied. He was an iron worker. He used to work really hard. He still just had a good. He was always just happy and not super happy, but he was genuine and trying to find his way in this world and didn't.
How long was he a resident here that you know of?
Boy. Ever since I've been here, so past 2-3 years.
What did he die of?
Don't know. And he did not, he wasn't an opiate user that we know of, but who knows? He probably did bump into some, and but that's speculation, that's not.
How many folks would you say are regular? Either users of opiates or meth, hard drugs?
No comment. It would just be speculation. And
would you say a majority or less? Or more?
I'd say it, you know, probably about the general population, and we're probably just a hair above that.
So it's, I don't know, less than 10%?
I don't know. I won't speculate.
I mean, I'm not trying to defame people in the camp.
No,
just to get a realistic notion of
right. What
people's needs are here and what their what their situation is.
I would say, I'll say it this way. There are people that are struggling to overcome things in their past, and I'm not trying to rationalize or make excuses for anybody, but they're alive and existing largely because they've been able to find temporary solutions to their pain and to their struggle.
But we're going to break from this interrogation for another musical moment or two, or three or four, so back at it shortly.
And that's the my father joined the Marine Corps. Semper Fidelis, which in Latin means always faithful. My father met Eleanor Roosevelt in 1945. The war at last was over. Still alive. Her husband was the president till he ran out of time. Her Franklin D was history, and they put him on the dime. My father joined the leather necks to stay out of the mines. The new Marine was just 15 in 1939. There were medals and malaria, the South Pacific War.
through jungles that were paradise. Soldiers die, soldiers live, to wonder why. Semper Fi, FIFO fun. Look out, peace time, here we come. Sometimes the wounds that never heal are easiest to hide.
John Gorka, not too familiar with his work. In fact, he's a new name to me. And the name of the song is, if I have it properly pronounced, Semper Fi, or Semper Fi, the motto of the U.S. Marine Corps. Murderers overseas, that sort of thing. No offense to you guys who are either so deeply committed that's just where it's at, or believe you're doing the right thing, but I believe you guys are a mercenary force that's serving the interests of some pretty bad corporate people. Or as General Butler once put it, war is a racket. And now back to the war against the poor in the Benchlands.
The camps are now seem to be in larger clusters. Partially, no doubt, because if you said they're cramming them in, they require a pool cube's distance.
I just said that just.
But that's an example. 6 feet or something.
3 feet. 3 feet minimum, just to keep the fire marshal happy, and without. And that's not just to keep the fire marshal happy. He's enforcing stuff that actually I've seen tents go up on a windy day.
Any fires in the last month?
Not that I've seen.
Anything you heard about?
No, not that I've heard about or seen. And
where will people likely expand to next, given the fact that they're likely to be rolling people into this?
We're going to start putting tents on the backs of large dogs, but it takes four dogs to put a tent up. And they have to be cooperative dogs and strong dogs. This one has been raised since a pup to be a very it's a war hound, as you can see. Yep. And it took about a year though to get her to calm down. She was kind of a she was a baby. She was a puppy. Now she's not. She's a full grown war hound.
Just stronger and faster.
But still just as loving as any. As can be. She's a dear member. Our dogs are dear members of our camp, and you know, we're some of the best.
Now, are dogs lovers. Allowed in these encampments up at the bench lands?
But how about up at the golf lands?
Golf lands, what I'm talking about.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Any reports from the golf lands about how conditions are as far as you can see?
And this is
I live here.
How do you know? I'm Robert, by the way.
He does the Thursday meetings that I go to. The Thursday meetings down at the. He's a good guy. Shows up at the city council meetings.
I live here.
Yeah.
I live here, so I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't really speak on it because I live there.
No problem. So. There have, of course, been threats to remove the camp at the end of the summer. What are folks thinking of doing? Any idea?
I'm going to see either way.
All right. Great.
He's a survivor, so am I. But there's some people that I wonder, what are they going to do? Because if you're not very mobile and you're not in great shape and you don't know how to hide out in the woods or how to hide out in an urban environment, what is somebody that's mobility or other health reason, or just age, or they need to be near facilities. What are they going to do?
And what do people need here in the camp in the next few weeks that are the most pressing needs?
Honesty from the city. Honesty and forward-looking information.
Any particular resources that they're looking for? Honesty, you're never going to get. But aside from what kind of resources would you be seeking?
People continually need tents and tarps. Because that allows us to adapt to different locations. We've had water issues, but they did fix the water yesterday.
How about the electricals? I see a lot of cords, of electrical cords on the ground.
We're working on trying to find, you know, our goal is 24 hours of power, 24/7 power to the people, 24/7. And currently they turn it on at 10 o'clock at night or so. You never know exactly what time it'll come on, and you don't know exactly when it'll end. And so those people that, you know, need communication devices for work or for just general living or lighting or for heating or for cooking, but basically just being able to charge your phone is
a major...
So
you're saying the power gets turned on at what time?
10 p.m.
Until when?
Maybe 9 in the morning,
something
like
during
that.
The day you don't get power?
No. So when people are sleeping, there's power. But they just switched that recently. I don't know why they did, but we're gonna we'll have a discussion with
switched it to that
previously
alternate. It was during the day.
Yeah. So I don't know what the rationale is. We're gonna actually try to have some sort of an established protocol for communicating stuff from the city and the county and any other agency, but so that we have a clearinghouse for information so that everybody can have access instead of just...
Good idea, but good luck with that.
Well, we're going to get it. We're going to get the information as much as possible. And, we have to carry our weight in terms of distributing the information and find and being partners with the city.
Now, when we originally spoke, you were saying that you were hoping that the Huff meeting, the group I work with, could move the meeting down here. What was your thought about that? Why are you interested?
Well,
is it particularly important tomorrow?
Because tomorrow... they will have the bulldozer here probably, and
why do you say that?
Because it's scheduled to come, and because they put the tags out
how many places are tagged?
I don't know for sure. More than I thought, but I'd say at least 20.
Are these at different locations in here? Or are they all
scattered throughout the camp? Mostly along the central, where you're easy to reach. They didn't come back. like where we're standing right now is off the beaten path. It's not in the central path. It's just where they do their stroll and put the tags down. And there are legitimate safety issues that they should be looking for.
And
I'm showing a tent.
Which one was it?
Here.
This little tent
and,
right here?
And the owners are up there looking at us, and I'm not going to mention their names. But
so
I just wanted
this
you
is
to
a
see
tent about, what, five feet by 4 feet, something like that?
4 feet, I'd say.
And it's this was given to...
And if you see, because their feet don't fit in... This was given by the city when they were...
City or the county?
I can't remember which.
Because the armory, which was previously being run by the county.
I could, off the record, I'd go up and ask them, or we could see if they would mind chatting anonymously or otherwise.
Sure.
They're...
Well, why don't you... I'm gonna take off because I got someone waiting, but... if you either decide to come tomorrow, because I don't think we're going to be moving the Huff meeting, I'll mention it.
Okay.
We'll see what they want to do. If we do, your tent is somewhere kind of parallel to this stairway here.
Yeah.
This is the
that one down there.
What color is your tent for those who want to find you?
It's
if you want to give out that info.
It's got like 8 foot tall paintings of screaming monkeys and there's a big blue tube, like a 2 foot diameter.
Ever the artist, Greg?
It's just stuff that happens. The wind blows and stuff sticks to my tent, and that's what happens. But people know how to find. But there's other Gregs, but crazy politic artist, numbnuts.
And we have been talking with none other than
Greg of the Benchlands.
Thank you, Greg.
Yep.
Also, Greg. Greg, you. Has theft increased, decreased, stayed the same?
Stayed the same. Pathetic.
You, on the other hand, have been able to maintain your phone. At least when I called you earlier today, I think I got a butt answer because I heard you talking, but you didn't hear me calling.
Really?
Yeah. So, apparently, I know in the past you've had trouble keeping a handle on the phone, whereas now you've been able to do it.
Well, for six, eight days, and usually the average is about 4 days before it gets stolen.
Interesting. How many phones would you?
Nine, I think so. Hectic.
Yeah.
Did you get an orange tag at all from the city? Nope, neither did I.
Because
they
asked me to do something, I'm not buying it.
Right, yeah.
Just off tagging my stuff. They did.
Right on, yep. Yep, yep, that's what they want to see is follow through. But some people that aren't around.
Slow up a bit, Greg.
Oh, yeah, sure, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Now I'm going to take
no work. For you is Jeremy or his authorities trying to limit the size of any particular area? Because I see that this is a pretty big tent you're showing me here. Looks like it's about 25 by 25 feet.
It's numerous. It's several individual tents.
Right.
Kind of come together.
A collection of tents.
To just to
that isn't a subject of.